Hey, everybody. This is Marta Kristen. I play Judy Robinson on Lost in Space, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Well, hello there, all you patrons and promoters of pop culture. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. And we are in full swing of this celebration of the 60s sci-fi sensation known as Lost in Space. That's right, the 1965 television series that stranded the Robinson family and pilot Don West into the farthest reaches of the cosmos. The show that brought us the robot that could not only warn us of danger, but he could carry a tune as well.
Hark how the sailors cry, joyously echoes nigh, Santa Lucia, Santa!
You bubble-headed booby, do you realize what you've done?
Yes, the amazing adventure that introduced the world to Dr. Zachary Smith.
Never fear, Smith is here.
This crazy collection of creatures and cliffhangers, it has been getting a lot of love right here on Comic Book Central. Been wanting to do this for a while. Oh, so glad it's finally happening. Hope you've been along for the entire ride. Kick things off a few episodes ago with a preview from Lost in Space author Mark Cushman. And then series stars Bill Mumy, Angela Cartwright, Mark Goddard. They've all joined me here in the lair. Today, the lovely and talented actress who brought Judy Robinson to life, Marta Kristen. She's going to sit down for an in-depth interview and then wrap things up next week with executive producer Kevin Burns, who will not only help us celebrate classic Lost in Space, he has got a surprising amount of insight for us on the new Lost in Space series that's headed to Netflix next year. You are not going to want to miss that one, I'm telling you. A lot of good stuff. Hope you're enjoying these conversations as much as I love bringing them to you. My chat with Marta Kristen just moments away. First, though, if you are listening to this episode the day that it goes online, Saturday, April 29th, and you are near Secaucus, New Jersey, push pause and get yourself over to the East Coast Comic Con because Marta, Bill, Angela, Mark, they're all appearing there this weekend. With the robot, with the chariot. We've been talking about this on these episodes these past few weeks. They're there this weekend. They're going to be part also of a special Q&A Sunday the 30th. So I recorded my chat with Marta as she was getting ready to head to New Jersey. She's there now. They're all there now. So if you're in the area, you got to go check them out. Another item of business. Next Saturday, I already mentioned my interview with Kevin Burns. Going to be a good one. I'm telling you, you don't want to miss it. But Saturday, May 6th is also Free Comic Book Day. That's right. Big day for comic book fans. In fact, take a listen to this. Spider-Man himself, Tom Holland, he's got a little bit of information for all of you about Free Comic Book Day.
Hey everyone, it's Tom Holland here. I am your new Spider-Man in the new Spider-Man Homecoming movie. I just want to let you in on a little secret. On May 6th, there will be a free giveaway of loads of different comics at your local comic book store. Make sure you find out the local participating stores. Make sure you grab a copy of the new Spectacular Spider-Man. And also make sure that you check out Spider-Man Homecoming in theaters July 7th. Thank you.
FreeComicBookDay.com. That's where you go to find out all of the free comics that are going to be available. And you can also, on that website, find out a participating comic book store in your area. So I know a lot of shops are featuring some really cool stuff. Special guests, events, contests, cosplay, all kinds of cool things at many of them. So check it out, freecomicbookday.com for all the information. And when you're hanging out in the comic book store on May 6th, be sure to tap somebody on the shoulder. Tell them Stuberman at Comic Book Central sent you there and tell them all about Comic Book Central. If they're not listening to the show, if they don't know about it, look, folks, you know who's been on the show. Over 200 guests. They're going to love the show if they're not familiar with it. So perfect way to get the word out. Perfect way to share the lair. We talk about that all the time. You can also share the lair on social media, facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork, Twitter at comicbookctrl. Share and retweet the episode posts each and every week. For those of you who are doing that, I really appreciate it. It gets it out to even more and more people. Links to Comic Book Central on those social media sites or at the website comicbookcentral.net. There you will also find each and every episode of the show in the archive. So if you've missed any of these Lost in Space episodes, they're in there waiting for you to download, to stream them. And you'll find a link to subscribe to the show on iTunes on the website as well. If you haven't done that already, be sure to do that. That way you won't miss bonus episodes like the one that came your way this week. Mark Goddard dropped on Wednesday, got you that bonus episode. So if you're subscribed in iTunes, you get that automatically. So, and if you're in iTunes, leave a review if you're digging what you're hearing. Always appreciate that. One other mention, I would be remiss if I did not say congratulations to my fellow podcaster, Ed Dalesta, over at the IndieCast for being named on the Huffington Post list of top 10 geek podcasts. That was fantastic. Nice article, nice write-up. Look, I know the IndieCast is awesome. Many of you out there know it's awesome, but how cool is it that the Huffington Post knows it's awesome too, and now everyone else knows who's read the article, so very cool. As many of you know, I contribute segments with my buddy Keith Voss. We contribute those to the IndieCast. We talk about Indiana Jones comics, a bunch of things, interviews, all kinds of cool stuff. We are incredibly proud to be a part of that show. Well-deserved mention in the Huffington Post. Also, big year for the IndieCast. 10-year anniversary for the IndieCast this year. So double congratulations to Ed and all of my buddies over there. People ask us all the time, how can you keep coming up with material for Indiana Jones? There's only been 4 movies. The last one was like a decade ago. I'm telling you what, Ed keeps them coming. The show's stronger than ever. We come up with all kinds of cool stuff. We dig deep. We dig deep into the mythos of Indiana Jones. There's a lot of good stuff out there. So they're out there. Kudos to you, sir, and to all my fellow IndieCasters.
Tune in each fortnight to the IndieCast, the world's number one Indiana Jones fan podcast.
Trust me.
Featuring the latest news, reviews, and interviews with on-screen and behind-the-scenes talent who helped bring to life the greatest adventure movie series ever made. Each episode has the latest from the world of Indiana Jones, as well as interactive segments, trivia, contests, and specials, including radio dramas and music retrospectives. The IndieCast.
It's a transmitter. It's a radio for speaking to God.
Available in iTunes or listen directly at theindiecast.com.
If adventure has a name, it must be the IndieCast.
And with Indiana Jones 5 on the way from Disney, IndieCast, you know it's only going to get bigger and better. So if you haven't had a chance to check it out yet, be sure to subscribe to that show as well and get in on the adventure. Man, you're going to love it. All right, that takes care of about everything on my list that I wanted to mention. Hey, if you can't be in Jersey this weekend to meet Marta Kristen in person, I've got the next best thing right here. You're going to be hearing from her in just minutes. First, a little bit of background on the talented actress and artist. Then, we are going to get lost in space with Marta Kristen. Marta was born Birgit and Elisa Rusanen in Oslo, Norway, and spent the first several years of her life in an orphanage before being adopted by an American couple. And Marta took to performing right away, singing, dancing, and eventually acting in summer stock when she was a teenager. A family trip to California proved to be life-changing as Marta was discovered by a producer, and she eventually landed guest roles in some of the most successful television shows of the 60s, including The Loretta Young Show, Leave It to Beaver, My Three Sons, and Alfred Hitchcock Presents, where she shared some screen time with her future TV brother, Billy Mumy. And Marta also appeared in several feature films, one for Disney, Savage Sam, the sequel to Old Yeller, and Beach Blanket Bingo, where she brought fantasy and folklore to life in the form of a mermaid named Lorelei. That same year, millions of TV viewers tuned in as Marta traded fins for a silver spacesuit when she appeared as Judy Robinson, the eldest sibling of a family lost in space. After 3 seasons of the Irwin Allen space saga, Marta encountered everything from monsters to body-snatching plants to intergalactic beauty pageant managers. And following the series, she continued to act in numerous commercials, television series, feature films, and on stage. And she recently discovered another artistic talent and passion, one she is eager to share with her many fans. Continuing my look back at the landmark sci-fi series with the incredible actress who portrayed Judy Robinson. From Evil Plant to Space Beauty, she has played it all. She is an amazing artist as well. Time to welcome in Marta Kristen. Marta, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Thank you so much. My pleasure. Love talking with you.
Love having you here. Love having your castmates here. Oh, man, this has been fun. So I'm glad everybody can get together. We're going to talk about the fact that you guys are getting together in person. That's going to be fun. We'll talk about a lot of things today. Look, typically here on the show, I like to jump back pretty far in time. I guess you would probably expect that, to go back to the early days. I like to find out the influences on my guests, like what influenced them to get into show business, things like that. Looking at your bio, I am completely amazed at your story, the experiences you had as a child in Norway, how you got to the States, all those different things. Can you sort of set the stage for us, for our listeners, on like how, like the experiences you had just as a little girl in Norway, and then you know, ultimately how that brought you to the States to a career in Hollywood?
Yes, absolutely. I was, as you said, born in Norway. My mother was Finnish, and my father had been a German soldier. And my mother was ordered from Finland to work for the German for a German officer up in Norway at the very end of the war. And she was pregnant with me, and she had to hide her pregnancy because she said she told me much later, of course, that when I finally met her, that she was in great fear of her life and of mine, that if this man had found out that she was pregnant, that he would have shot her. And so anyway, she hid her pregnancy. She was very, very tiny and was able to hide her pregnancy and gave birth to me by herself in the room in Norway. And immediately she and her friend took me to a hospital where they put me in an orphanage, which was an underground orphanage in terms that it was hidden from the Germans, because the Germans had been known to take children who were blonde, blue-eyed, and send them to Germany, and where wealthy German people would you know take these children in as their own. And so I spent 5 years there, almost 5 years, until I was adopted by an American couple who were older. My mother was in her late 40s, and my father was in his early 50s, my adopted parents. And so they had heard about a boy in Michigan that had been adopted from this orphanage in Drammen near Oslo. And they contacted the woman who placed children, and it took 2 years. My mother said she worked every day for 2 years just to do a little something to get me to America. And, wow. And she said that when we landed and I came toward her, I walked like the Charlie Chaplin in The Tramp. And I must have seen The Tramp.
I was wondering, like, had you seen? Yeah, do you recall any memories of that? Or
You know, I don't remember, but I must have seen it. And of course, that was about an orphan, and they immediately recognized that this young girl, this little girl, you know, has a way about her that she obviously is theatrical. And I do remember singing and dancing at the orphanage. I was at one point called the Nazi child because someone found out that I was German, half German. And
did you know, you know, you were what, how old at that time? I mean, because you were in the orphanage until you're what, five?
Almost five, yeah.
Okay, so did you understand any, like, how much can a five-year-old process of what's going on? Because you didn't know anything about your backstory. Obviously, you know, you're right from birth, you were into the orphanage. Did you get a sense of what any of that was, or, like, how did you react as a five-year-old?
As a five-year-old, I simply entertained. You know, it was I have a very strong sense of justice and injustice, and I think it comes from that time in the orphanage where you're, you know, the sins of your parents are visited, the sins of the parents are visited on their children, and you have no choice about who. What your background is, you're born, and so when you are accused of something, you know, that you have no choice over, that your father was, simply a German soldier, but just being German at the time, of course.
Right.
Did
you understand the impact of what they were calling you? I mean, did you?
No.
Or you just knew it was something negative? You knew it was like a name calling.
Yeah, it was name calling. It was bullying. And bullying over something that you had no,
right.
you know, no control over. And this happens throughout the world. It happens daily. It happens every second of every day. It continues, but it's human nature. Anyway, these most remarkable people who recognized how much I loved acting and singing and dancing, and they gave me lessons covering that, and I did. They got me into children's theater when I almost immediately.
And this is your adoptive parents?
Adopted parents.
Yeah.
They were educators. Wow. My father was a professor of philosophy. My mother was a school teacher, and they were the most loving. They saved my life, essentially. They were. Yeah. So loving and kind and thoughtful, and I felt safe with them, and they were just remarkable human beings. They ended up being the oldest members in the Peace Corps. They continued their education, their teaching, and after they retired, and they just were astounding. And God, I can't tell you how lucky I was to have.
I was going to say, what does that say about the fortitude of of your birth mother just for surviving in that and keeping you alive and going through all that, and then to find these amazing parents to raise you? I mean, that just had – your background has to be just, survive no matter what, I would think at that point.
That's the case. It's been throughout my life. You just survive. You go forward. Going to the end of their lives, I took care of them. I was able to, complete that circle. And I remember one time my mother, after my father had passed away, I would go and watch the sunset every evening with my mother, as my mother did with my father. And so we'd have a cocktail and we'd sit and watch the sunset. And one evening, as I was leaving, my mother called me back and sat me down and said, "I just want to tell you that please don't ever feel guilty. Don't have any regrets, because you have been the best daughter one could ever have." And that is the greatest gift a parent can give a child. Of course, you always feel regret. There's always something that you can think of that you didn't do, and you later on you think, "I should have done that." Mm-hmm. But like, for instance, I spent every evening with her for a couple of years, but on my birthday, my husband Kevin took me to Santa Barbara just one night, and that was the night she died, that regret of saying,
"Of course, that's going to stay." Yeah, of course, that'll stay with you. Yeah.
But then I have to remember what she told me.
The gift she gave you for telling me. Yeah, that's just amazing. It's an amazing story. How do you go from this sort of, Norman Rockwell kind of existence on a 5-acre farm to Hollywood?
My dad took a sabbatical from Wayne State University and to write a book on the philosophy of education. About Kierkegaard and Dewey, and I wanted to use the USC library. My mother had a sister who lived in Pacific Palisades. So we loaded the car up and drove out here.
Head to Beverly.
And rented an apartment, and I started high school here. And then James Harris, the producer of Lolita, came up to me in a restaurant and said, "Have you ever been interested in acting?" And I said, "I've never been interested in anything else." And he said, "I'm producing a movie called Lolita, and would love for you to meet Stanley Kubrick." And he said, "But first, I want you to read the book. I want your parents to read the book." And he met with my parents, and my parents said, "No, this is, you know, this not for."
Yeah, you're really young at the time. Yeah, you're really young.
I was 15. Yeah,
that's just. But that seems like such a Hollywood story, doesn't it? Doesn't seem like you made that up. You know, like, "Oh, I'm in a diner and having a hamburger," and this, "Hey, kid, you want to be in show business?"
Yeah, it's so interesting where the different paths my life has taken because of circumstance, synchronicity, you know, certain circumstances that you know, I was, that was given to me and presented to me. Obviously I didn't do the movie, although I thought the movie was brilliant. Oh my God. I just loved that movie. The adaptation of the book was perfect. I mean, it couldn't have been better. James Harris, who I had, of course, met with my parents, called them and said, "Look, I'm really impressed with Marta, and I would love to, find an agent for her." And we all worked together, or he worked with my parents, really. I started my working through him. And I became sort of the ingenue of that time, of the 60s, early 60s.
Yeah, we see all these photos and everything, especially on your website, too. Yeah, I want to hit a couple roles, early roles, before we get lost in space with Judy Robinson, which is what we're going to talk about today. But 1961, Alfred Hitchcock Presents. This episode has come up on this show before. With one Bill Mumy.
Oh, with Bill Mumy, right.
Thank goodness for free samples at supermarkets.
Yes, yes, the Jiffy Snack Girl.
They saved your life. Yes. Oh, look, he told us about his experience with Hitchcock, which is still apparently traumatized him to this day. Yours was less traumatic, I'm guessing.
Yes, it was much less traumatic. Yes. Bill was adorable, of course.
Yeah.
And you know, he just couldn't stop moving, as he talked about, and Hitchcock. I just saw Billy's eyes just widen, you know. And later, I asked him what had happened, and he told me his story.
Yeah.
But Hitchcock was very, very kind to me, and I just sat and watched him in awe. He sat in this chair, his director's chair, and just, you know, sort of shouted out orders to everybody from there, and not really shouted. I mean, he was rather quiet and in his demeanor, but strong.
Yeah.
You could see that he ran the show.
Oh, look, he referred to actors as cattle. Yeah, he referred to actors as cattle. So that's legendary. Yeah. So there's nothing you say about that is gonna. You don't have to couch it in any way. You know, he made it clear his intentions. He was in charge, and that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and I was his type. I was blonde, blue-eyed, and you know, very Nordic, and with the high cheekbones, I was honored to be asked to for him to ask for me to do that show. And it was my second Alfred Hitchcock Presents. I had done a previous one with Susan Harrison, who kills me in the show, called
Spoiler
The
Alert.
Place.
Spoiler alert. Yeah, well, at least you didn't die. At least you didn't die.
Oh, yes,
Bill
no,
Mumy's
you
hands.
Don't. Spoiler alert. It was quite a long time ago.
I'm guessing if it had been a decade earlier, he probably would have had you in the features, though, because like you said, that you were the Hitchcock type. I would imagine you would have been in that.
Yeah.
But you got the TV version of it. Another beat, long before Daryl Hannah and Splash, we had Lorelei in Beach Blanket Bingo. What was your motivation of filming as a mermaid?
I loved being outdoors. I loved swimming. I, you know, was very athletic. I just... It was a movie that, you know, it was sort of, you know, the genre of the times.
Yeah, there are a bunch of these, right?
Beach party movies.
Beach party movies. Yeah, they're all like Annette and Frankie, and they're like, everybody's out there in bikinis and surfing. Yeah, yeah, there's a ton of these things.
Yeah, and I, you know, I really had a wonderful time doing it. Yeah, I was a body surfer, and I sort of loved the idea of the mermaid because of the Hans Christian Andersen story of the mermaid,
classic.
The Little Mermaid. And I thought, well, you know, why not? That would be fun to do. And it was this, and it was, you know, sort of that, what do you call it, a byline, or, you know, a story within a story of, you know, of the movie. And
yeah, Annette and Frank, you're off doing something else, and then there's
they're doing something else.
I forgot what his name is, but...
Yeah, and so that nice little piece of bit of story and of the mermaid being found and the romance that she has with a young man.
Well, we love comic books here. You even made it into the comic book adaptation.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
did you ever
goodness.
Get to see it? Yeah, they had a comic book. Yeah, they had, like, back in the 60s, they had a comic book for everything back then. And it was, you're in it. So I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No, but, I've never seen it.
Yeah, your little scenes are in it.
You know, I forget to tell people about these things. Like, I was also in a movie, and it was shown, and won the Catholic Prize. And I mean, it was, you know, people say, "Oh, I didn't know this about you. I don't talk about my, you know, the things that I've done. I sort of forget them myself because as an actor, you're always thinking of your next work, your next job.
That's the funny thing you talk about to actors, and they're always like moving forward, and we as fans are always moving backwards because we always want to just talk about these cool things you did, and you're like. Dude, I'm on to like five other things now. I know.
Right, right. Oh, did I do that? Oh, yes.
Right. And of course, we go back 50 years because that's a funny thing is because we like go through especially now with the Blu-ray of Lost in Space, you know, we get to go through these things like the Zapruder film and just like go scene by scene and frame by frame. And, I'm sure we're asking you stuff and you're like, I haven't. Right, exactly. So hopefully if you sit close enough to Mumi, he's got it all locked in.
Oh,
in his
DNA. Oh, yeah. Bill, I do. I have to. If I have a question, that's my go-to person.
Yeah, between him and Kevin Burns, I think you're probably.
Oh, Kevin Burns,
and
yeah.
Mark
Kevin,
Cushman.
Of
we talked about the. Have you seen the Mark Cushman books? Well, you wrote the foreword of the third one, I think. Yeah, so
I did. Yes.
Yeah. Those things are crazy detailed. So yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's amazing the amount of detail. Yeah, the letter. I mean, in my foreword. I reread it the other day, and I thought, I sort of wrote it in different with different time frames, you know, but it was a little uneven. They did a little bit of editing and it's sort of a little bit uneven, as I said. But
so you were writing
what,
things
how I wrote.
You were so, like as you were living it and going back and
yeah.
It's fun to look. I told him. I said I kind of use it like my Twilight Zone companion book is like as I'm watching the episodes, the books are cracked open. So I get to, and it's like, it's every day of your life for 3 years, which is crazy.
Yeah.
It's just so fun to watch, to use those. Well, hey, look, let's talk about Lost in Space. Judy Robinson, you were working on an episode of The Greatest Show on Earth. That's when you were approached?
Yes. Well, okay. I had worked on it. And because I was with the top agency in the business, Irwin Allen was with them as well. And so Irwin was trying to package the show, and he had screen tested a couple of women and young women, and then someone suggested that they watch the Greatest Show on Earth segment episode that I had done, and he said, "I want that girl." And so,
again, that old Hollywood story, like that, you know, that it seems like that would, you know, come on, kid.
Yeah, right. Come on, kid. I want you. So when I met with him, I remember I just wore big earrings and a pink boucle, beautiful suit, and it was, I mean, exactly the perfect outfit to wear to meet Irwin Allen because he loved color, he loved sparkle, he loved bangles, And although that wasn't really me, I mean, it was obviously since I presented myself in that way. But you know, I tend to be more subtle and not wear a lot of color. And for some reason, I did for this. And but then I read that there would be eight. I think eight cast members, and there were so many cast members in it that I thought, well, I'm just going to get lost.
lost on the set.
And you know, I'll just be end up somewhere in the background. And so I said, no, I you know, I'm not interested, because I was doing every show on television, and I had done a.
Yeah, it was like guest spots, and you even had a feature film, too, right? There was the sequel to Old Yeller.
Right, Savage Sam, and I had, you know, and my career, I had really wanted to go to New York and do theater, and that was had been my original thought, and because I loved theater, and I was doing theater then, small theater companies in the Morgan Wixon Theater in Southern California, Santa Monica. And, you know, I continued to do study dance and voice and with the thought of trying to do theater in New York. And so I said, no, I have other plans. But Irwin called me every day for a couple of weeks. And, you know, I would get, Mr. Allen is calling, Mr. Irwin Allen is calling.
Oh, man.
So I'd say, and he'd say, Marta, he'd say, I want you to be in the show. And I, you know, you're the only one. And of course he got his way.
But that had to feel good though, as an actress too, to just know, like, because he's, you know, at that point he could probably just start auditioning actresses, but to say specifically, you're it. And this is, I don't want to move forward without you. That had to be huge.
It was, well, of course, yeah. And, you know, and of course he promised me, you know, the moon and the stars.
Of course, yeah, of course.
and as it turned out, it was the best, you know, most wonderful choice I made. When I think about it now, I can't believe how Lost in Space still, you know, remains in the hearts and minds of people that, you know, watched it as children and now are having, you know, their own children and grandchildren watch the show.
Yeah.
It was a very good choice, and it gave me an opportunity to, throughout all these years, to meet people and fans that I really enjoy talking to, and I'm in many ways a people person, and you know, because as an actor, you know, you absorb, not unlike a therapist, you absorb people's stories and who they are, and I think actors must be empathetic, you know, people's experiences and their lives. And so, you know, I do care. And that, I think people recognize that in me. So I hope they understand that, that about me.
Well, on the topic of people and thoughts and feelings, you lead me right into my next topic here. Something I've been doing with your Lost in Space family on all these episodes, a little free association about your Lost in Space family. You up for that?
Yes.
Okay. Just whatever pops in your head. Irwin Allen.
whatever pops into my head. Oh, my goodness. His enthusiasm, his great, his boyishness, his imagination. It was like a young boy reliving what a boy would want to do and explore.
Guy Williams.
Oh, Guy, just this handsome, strong, erudite, a man who I loved the music and beautiful things and just had an elegance about him.
June Lockhart.
Oh, my goodness, a rock and roller, believe it or not. One of the smartest women I have ever met. She has this ability to talk with great knowledge and authority about so many different subjects. She has, and on top of that, she's a rock and roller. She loves any kind of music, all kinds of music. She recently, a couple of years ago, received a medal from NASA about her involvement with the space program. I mean, she is a journalist. She's everything. I just admire her so much. She is just an incredibly accomplished woman.
Bob May and Dick Tufeld.
Oh, well, I'm saying that with each one. Bob was the robot. He had this great love for the robot, and you'd get him to talk about his family, but he would talk about them for a while, and then he would go back to the robot. He really became he identified so strongly with this character that he loved the robot and his fans. He would give his fans just anything. He was really a lovely man and a man who raised a family and was a good father and husband and I know Judy and we were all so very sorry when he passed. Dick Tufeld, oh Dick, what a charming, lovely person, another good family man, a man with great intelligence and a wonderful storyteller. He and Jonathan would get together. My goodness, it was a battle of who could tell the best story. And Dick, of course, had a very long career as a voiceover actor, and he was just a charming and learned man as well. He loved reading books and loved talking about politics and literature and just a wonderful person. And I loved his wife too. His wife and his children. They all have this great sense of humor. Very, very funny.
Jonathan Harris.
Oh, Jonathan was. Oh my goodness. He was a mentor for me in many ways. I would watch him work and would learn so much about how to go about perfecting your role and honoring the character that you're playing and never going off course and finding a way to survive as the character. Because Jonathan could have easily been written out, and he knew that in the early part of the show, because he was a villain. He had been written in as a villain. And he knew that villains, sooner or later, are going to either be killed off or they're going to be, you know,
vanquished
written
in some
out,
way, yeah.
Written out in some way. So he knew that he had to find something that would make him more agreeable, and it turned out that, of course, he was the villain you love to hate, and this giddy, effete, almost, and effeminate in some ways, a character that turned out to be the villain you love to hate, and for instance, Jonathan taught me that you always write for yourself the last line in a scene so that the camera ends up on you. I don't do that myself, but I don't have the kind of power that he did, because Jonathan would take the script home and rewrite much of his dialogue. And he loved Dr. Smith. He, you know, he said, "I'm the only Dr. Smith." And that was true. You know, no one could touch him. The fans loved him. He was a great raconteur as well. He could talk and tell stories about his life and about his experiences in theater. The idea that he, you know, started in as a pharmacist and a very poor Jewish family in the Bronx, I believe it was, and became this person who took on this accent that when people would ask him if he was British, he'd say, "No, just affected."
And, do you have a Harris imitation? Everybody's got one.
No, I don't.
You have
no.
to have one. Even when you're no. around the set, somebody's like, "Oh, the party."
I wouldn't dare. I wouldn't dare. Not with Kevin Burns and Billy Mooney.
All right. Fair enough.
Oh, no. But, Jonathan, I loved him. I loved him. He was so honorable, and the crew loved him. He always treated the crew with great respect, and that is something that is so important. He wasn't... He was never difficult. He stood up for himself. He was so loving and kind to the crew, and they don't forget that. Mm-hmm. They and as well as you should be, you know.
They take care of you. They give you the lighting. They give you the.
They're the ones.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
But he didn't do it. He didn't do it. You know, for
no,
any
no,
other
but
reason.
He...
But right. Of course, you know, he was, you know, we were all on the set for very long hours.
He knows
hours
it's a team. Yeah, he knows it's a team that's working together.
Exactly. It's a team. It's a team sport.
Yeah.
Show business.
Angela Cartwright.
Angela and I really didn't get to know each other very well until we did the movie together in England. And my mother had just passed away, and I was so bereft because... You know, she was, aside from my husband, my best friend. And but one thing I knew was that my mother, who was the strongest woman I'd ever known and the smartest woman I'd ever known, she and June, I knew that she would have wanted me to do the movie and not stay at home to mourn. And so I did go to England, and Angela was so kind. She was in the room next to me, and she would knock on my door and say, "Are you all right? Is everything okay? Can I get anything for you?" And we sort of toured London together, and she knew London quite well. And so she even though she's younger, she sort of took care of me, and we really developed a bond during that time. And she's a wonderful artist. She sort of ignited the fire under me to start painting. And I love her. I have a beautiful angel photograph that she had taken and that she tinted in my home. And that's what she is to me. She's an angel. And I adore her. She's funny. She's smart. She's talented. If you want to know anything about computers, she's got it. You can ask her. She's just a remarkable woman. And now she's a grandmother and she has more energy than I know anyone has. She, you know, she begins in the early part of the day and doesn't end until, you know, late at night. She can just go through the day and be creative and productive. She's quite an amazing woman.
Bill Mooney.
Billy. Billy. Billy and I, we are really like brother and sister in so many ways. I like to say that I taught him about Bob Dylan and about much of the music scene during the 60s. And He continued on, of course, in music. He's another rock and roller. He's a dreamer in many ways. Billy's very smart and very creative, and obviously a poet and a songwriter. And when you go to his house is. His walls are filled with guitars, and he's a collector, and he you know loves music of all kinds, and he's a remarkable person in so many ways because he has the ability to memorize a script in an hour, and I'm not sure if he has a photographic memory, but one thinks he might. And he's a comic book writer and an artist, and he has so many different talents and abilities. I guess we all, when you're in the creative field, it reaches out in many different branches or fingers of the creative world, and so it goes with all of us. We're actors, artists, singers, writers of poet. I write poetry, and I'm just beginning to write some scene work. In a group that I'm with, and Billy is that way. Billy is multi talented, and we fight a little bit, and then we kiss and make up, and we fight again, and then we hug and make up, because we're both very emotional, and I have an ownership for Judy Robinson, I feel an ownership for that, because I love her so much, so when I asked him for some changes for my character, he got for the reading for the Blu-ray. He got a little bit offended. Yeah, he got a little offended, and so, but he changed it.
You pulled a Jonathan Harris on him?
I pulled a Jonathan Harris
nice.
On him. Very
See?
Good.
There's
hey,
the mentor.
Jonathan lives.
Yes, he was your mentor. There you go. He taught you well.
That's right. Oh, thank you for pointing that out.
There you go.
Yes, because Jonathan always told me, Marta, you have to take care of yourself.
See, you do have a Jonathan Harris. I knew it was in you there. I knew you had one there. Mark Goddard.
Oh, Mark, he's so funny. Mark is the funniest, one of the funniest. He has made me laugh probably more than anybody. He has done his various imitations of people. I laugh so hard. He's clever. That he went on to teach special needs to me is so admirable, and he's always at the shows. He's the one who stands up and calls people over. Hey, come on over, let's talk. If you have a slow 15-minute time when people are coming in through. In between when the show opens and so it tends to be slow in the beginning, then he's calling people over, letting them know, and then he starts telling them stories and talking to them that's who Mark is. Mark is also a very unique person in his own way. I mean, it's hard to talk
he's
about
nuts.
Mark because
he's nuts. I talked to him. Yeah, he's funny.
I mean, I had a mad crush on him. I was married but I thought he was so handsome, number one, and so funny. I just loved his personality. He would say, for instance, when he was talking when we had the talking carrot on the Great Vegetable Rebellion, he yelled out to the whole crew, 7 years of method acting, method teaching, and here I am talking to a carrot. What are my intentions here?
Where's my motivation?
What's my motivation? Yes, that was Mark.
Well, you mentioned the chemistry too. I mean, it's obviously. Look, I'm sure I know you get this all the time. And the thing is, the series is designed for this. You've got Judy, you've got Don. I mean, they're the same age.
Yes.
But talk a little bit about the fact. Like you wanted there to be more of that in the show. There wasn't. Explain for our listeners a little bit, because kind of set the stage a little bit. 1960s, it is a kid's show. What was the feeling about the romance angle of it and your conversations with Irwin Allen? Because you wanted more of that, right?
Yes, and Irwin promised me that there would be. And, of course, there wasn't. And because CBS wrote a memo saying, no touching, no romance. This is a kid's show. So the original thought was that we would indeed have a connection and there would be a flirtation and maybe, onto other things like marriage, of course, first. But no, that wasn't the way the show was meant, how the network.
Well, I think June Lockhart even said they didn't want the parents holding hands, like
no,
Mom
they didn't
and Dad
even want
Robinson.
The parents.
Yeah,
right. And so we would have a flirtation. There was a slight flirtation, mm-hmm. as there was between Mom and Dad, looking at each other longingly. But other than that, no, it wasn't meant to be, which was unfortunate because I think in the Blu-ray we sort of reconciled that. We settled that in many ways by showing that we've been married and had a child it was very frustrating for me because it wasn't what I had imagined it was going to be, in terms of after in the first year where we all had things to do. We all had storylines. We all had plot lines that, centered around, each character. And then there was always, and it was about the family and about survival and about how you work things out in a family, no matter what happens. And I do believe that that's why Lost in Space remains so popular and is iconic because of that family connection.
Yeah, I talked about this with Bill Mumy. It's almost like it's three different TV shows. There's a little something for everybody. You do get Space Family Robinson in season one, and then you get, these crazy pop culture episodes, coming into it. It's just, there's a little something for everybody, but I think, like, you're right, that family dynamic always comes through, even with the music, and the little, the Robinson heartfelt theme and all that. Like you said, eventually it becomes the Smith and Robot and Will story, and that's fine. I mean, those are the memorable things. But Judy did get her share of episodes. I mean, she did have a few of them. I think your favorite was Attack of the Monster Plants, right?
Well, yes, because
By the way, I love, this is my favorite part. I love the epilogue on the Blu-ray. I love watching you guys get together and wrapping up the story. But I love listening to you guys sit together and watch these episodes. This is worth the price of admission. It is the funniest thing listening to you guys, especially on the Freaky Space Hippie episodes, but this is one of the ones that has the commentary. So for people that don't have it yet, go get it. This is a pretty cool episode, though, in beautiful black and white.
Beautiful black and white, the screaming plants and the it gave me the opportunity to really show how I could at least do a little something different from just being pretty and rocking back and forth and
doing laundry,
spacecraft and doing laundry.
Making
right.
Sandwiches.
Right. It was exciting for me to have that, that opportunity to, to act, to do something different. And you know, I just wish that I had had more chances to show my acting chops, because, you know, I really did. I do love acting, and I started a theater company called. I was a founding member and a president of the group called the West Coast Ensemble, and was part of that for many years. And thinking that Lost in Space in the beginning would give me some, you know, acting opportunity, because it was serious in the first year.
Yeah.
Or more. Then, you know, and then when it changed, of course, it, you know, changed for me as well. But it is what it is. You as an actor, you don't have a lot of power in the industry unless you're, you know, one of the producers and of the stars of the show. But
well, it's definitely a producer's medium. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely
it
that.
Really is.
One thing I'm interested too in talking to actors though is that one acting technique, I don't know if you use it or not, but is that. Sometimes actors and actresses will give their character a backstory, whether it's played out on TV or not. I know in the unaired pilot, it's mentioned that Judy heroically postponed a career in the musical comedy field. They do mention it. It's a drop in there. It never aired. I'm sure it was in the script when you read it. Did you give Judy a backstory? Did any of that play into it?
In your mind? I always gave a backstory to my. I always give a backstory.
Was
to
it
my
that musical comedy thing, or did you even give flesh that out even
I
more?
No, I thought of it more as a girl like myself who had planned to go to Broadway, to go to Juilliard, and then go to Broadway, and doing Shakespeare really, and walking around. I saw Judy as walking around, and this is what I told Irwin. You know, reciting, out damn spot out, I say 1, 2, why then it's time to do hell is mercy, fie, my lord, fie. You know, Zadie Macbeth, you know, and I thought that would be just charming and lovely, but they never incorporated that. Hmm. And you can only ask so many times and complain so many times, and then, you know, you realize that it's just not going to be heard.
More creatures, more explosions.
More explosions.
There were a couple different – before I forget, the Attack of the Monster Plants. One of the biggest controversies, I guess, about the episode, too, is the fact that we never know what happens to evil plant Judy.
Oh, right.
Like, did you actually – was there – you didn't film anything, though.
No.
All the memos. We see that in Cushman's book, is all the memos coming down. It's like they keep toning it down. Eventually, there's like no even mention. So, but, okay. I didn't know if you had actually rehearsed anything
No. Okay. I think it was assumed that once the real Judy was discovered, the old Judy would just sort of disappear.
Wither away, and, like the plant that
wither, go out into the atmosphere somewhere. Yeah. And, it really was a rather balletic part for me, because I had studied dance for so many years. I've mentioned this often about going into the plant and just sort of gently, float or almost withering into the center of the plant, and that to me is balletic, and really good actors, use their body and their voice and is their instrument, so I admired that in that piece, because of the body language that came out of it.
I talked about this with Angela. Writer Jackson Gillis, he wrote several Penny-centric episodes. He also wrote a Judy-centric episode, Space Beauty. He had a fondness for the female characters, wanted to see you guys doing a little bit more, too.
Yeah.
I'm guessing by the time you get to the robot in drag... in an episode, it's like all bets are off. But that has to be so freeing for an actress too. There's no wrong choice you can make in an episode like that, is there?
No. As a matter of fact, you see, at least I see, that I am smiling through just sort of to myself through so many of the episodes because I'm thinking, this, it's come to this, has it? but not in a derogatory way. I was rather amused by it. And, you know, I just couldn't quite figure it out. And so I just sort of went with it. And
serious
figured,
moment
well,
in that episode, though, too, because when you're walking through the snow at the end, that you had a you had an incident after filming, after they wrapped, right?
Oh, well, one of the pieces of the, they had some, like, snow falling down on me, and they were actually pieces of kind of, it wasn't a wax, but it was something like that, and it burned my eye, and I was concerned about that, but
you ended up in the infirmary with that, didn't they? Like,
yes,
they rushed,
yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
See, I mean, look, you're laying it all out on the line, though. I mean, that's the commitment as an actress there.
But I've been strapped, you know, with bullets and explosions and in other films after that. So falling
par for the course on an Irwin. Yeah, well, that's true too. Yeah, with Tom Selleck too. Yeah, there's so many different things there too. Well, you mentioned the feature film. You get to reunite, do some cameos there. What were your thoughts about the 1998 feature film?
It was written and produced by some very important people. The problem was that they wanted to update it to make it more for what they told me is, well, we're making it darker. And I thought, well, I don't know about that. But when I read the script, what I liked was that the women were smart and accomplished and, were clever and, and were given, more gravitas. And, but, when I look back on it, It was too dark, and I couldn't understand why Gary Oldman had such a, he wasn't really Dr. Smith. I didn't particularly love the film. I thought it was slow, and I thought it didn't represent what Lost in Space. It could have been named anything else, but it really wasn't Lost in Space. For me, the mistake was that they should have brought it back in its old form and made it campy and made it lighter and not lighter necessarily, I guess lighter. It's hard to explain. I don't like to diss the movie because.
No, yeah, you're talking to a fan of it. I like it. I love both. I've said that before. Yeah. I kind of like it. Bill Mumy had a good point, though, was that in the TV show, you never knew that Dr. Smith was the Robinsons never knew that he tried to kill them.
Right.
Whereas in the movie, they did. And so I think that plays a little darker, too. But there's nothing to apologize. It's interesting.
Yeah, because
the reason I ask is because Netflix bringing back Lost in Space in a big way. Have asked your other castmates about this. I'm sure you have signed documentation. I know you can't give us a lot. Can you just give us your overall thoughts at this point, though, on it? And maybe what you do know.
I'm really pleased that they're bringing it back. And, I know that they're going to do it with a more serious nature. I'm hoping that I can get on the show. What I would like to do is, I did a movie, Battle Beyond the Stars, and I was the leader of my people at the time. In that show, in that movie, and what I'd
classic.
Love to do,
yeah, cult classic.
Yeah, and what I would love to do is be something like that, leader of a colony. And on one of the outer planets, and you know, and have an ongoing role in that. That would be my great hope that, I don't know whether they want to do anything like that, but, maybe Kevin Burns, Kevin, you know, is simply, he doesn't have, I think, a lot of input into what's going to happen in the show, because that's sort of left up to the new producers.
The showrunner, yeah, they'll have showrunners. There's guys, they'll come in. Yeah. And, yeah, but there's the day-to-day operations are going on. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and I continue to act, and I continue to study, and a friend of mine, Gary Austin, who founded the Groundlings, with whom I studied for many years, just passed away, and we just had a memorial for him on Saturday, and he was a great teacher, and I'm studying with his wife, continue to study with his wife, and do scenes, master class scene study at the Ruskin Theater here in Santa Monica, and as I said, I'm writing, I'm now beginning to write, so you know I'm. My husband passed away last year,
our condolences for that as well. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been just a horrible, difficult, as anyone who has lost anyone knows. It's 43 years together, and so I'm trying to redefine myself, or to get back to, you know, my old dreams and. I spent a great deal of time, being his emotional and his cheerleader. He was an elder abuse attorney, wonderful, most amazing man, Harvard educated, comes from a very poor background like myself, but didn't go the corporate route. Decided that he was going to serve. Serve humanity in the way that he could best do, and that was in elder abuse and saving lives in nursing homes and
amazing work and,
so now it's been almost a year since he died and it would be such a great gift to be able to work again in the business in something that would be, fitting for me as a woman and as a and part of the old Lost in Space, and that would be to now show up as a president.
Well, there's that. Well, we see Linda Carter showing up at Supergirl as a president now, so you never know.
Oh, is she?
She's the president on Supergirl. Well, she's kind of an alien president. There's a whole backstory, but. They're bringing back a lot of these shows are doing that. So yeah, that's certainly not out of the realm of possibility. I will throw that question out to Kevin Burns when I ask him. Never know. There, who knows? I always would love to see an animated Lost in Space series. You can tell you still got the pipes. So that's amazing.
Well, thank you.
You're obviously throwing yourself into your artwork, and also look, as we're recording this conversation, you're getting ready to reunite with your Lost in Space family at the East Coast Comic Con. That's April 29th and 30th. It's yourself, Mark Goddard, Bill Mumy, Angela Cartwright, the Chariot, the Robot, you're all going to be there. Man, what are you looking forward to most at the event?
Well, being with my mates and meeting people who I've known throughout these years and new people. I love seeing them and talking and comparing stories about what's going on in their lives and it's at the Meadowlands Expo Center in Secaucus, and it's always fun to go back east, because I was raised in Michigan, and that's the Midwest, but, close enough to New York.
Fans are going to have a blast meeting you guys. What does it mean to you personally that we're still talking about Lost in Space over a half century later, that it's hitting new generations each time?
Well, it's really remarkable, and I know it's because it's about family. I know, I'm certain about that. And about the love of family and how families survive no matter what. You know, if you stay together, if you work with each other and, if you respect and admire each other, then you'll make it. And that's what we all try and do in our lives, or at least hopefully try and accomplish in our lives. And I think that's why it lives. And it's endearing, and at times very silly, and beyond belief, but it's always about family.
The website is martakristen.com. That's where we can find out everything about you, what you've got going on, and your amazing artwork. It's fun to look at this stuff, and we can get it, right? We can get your artwork and have it.
Well, not at this time, because
you're moving toward that.
Yes, I did have it up and for a little while, but then Kevin died and I just sort of lost heart. But yes,
I'm
working on a piece called Lost in Space.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah, it's an abstract piece but I think the fans will like it. What I'm going to do is make it a small poster. And so it's more affordable because
fantastic.
The original the one that I did have out was very expensive.
The
to G-Clay, produce.
I think, was like 600 or something.
Yeah,
or, yeah,
and
yeah.
It was and it was very expensive to produce because it was, you know, a master printer did it, and it was really beautiful. But and it took me, you know, 6 months to paint. So,
oh, this is gonna be amazing. No, we're looking forward to that. Hopefully, we'll get that up soon, and we'll look forward to it. Marta, have an amazing time reuniting with your Lost in Space family, meeting the fans.
Thank you,
man. And thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Well, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much, Joe. You take care.
I really hope Marta does get to appear in the new Lost in Space series. How cool would that be? Look, that's something that's come up in all of these interviews with the original cast. I've asked all of them about the new series, what they think of it, what they know about it. They've all said they're excited about this new show coming to Netflix next year. Bill Mumy talked about visiting the set. They're all stoked about it. You're going to hear a lot more about it next week when I chat with executive producer Kevin Burns. You don't want to miss that interview. Mark Goddard has said there are more people lost in space out there. If you've heard his interview, he made a mention of that. Marta referenced it today. You're going to hear more details about that from Kevin next week. So yeah, the original cast could definitely make some appearances. I think that would make total sense. Now think about Star Trek. All the different series, you know, they're always meeting up with new people out there, guest stars each and every week. So many different series out there. So, look, if it happens, you're sure to hear about it on Marta's website. I'm going to put the link to her website in the show notes for this episode of my website, comicbookcentral.net. In fact, links to everything you've heard in all these episodes, everybody's websites, how to order their books, Bill and Angela's books, Mark Goddard's books, Mark Cushman's incredibly detailed 3-volume Lost in Space set. I've got those sitting right next to me as I watch all the episodes on Blu-ray. It's so much fun to do it that way. The Blu-ray set link is in the show notes as well. So very cool set. It's got Bill Mumy's wrap up to the entire series called Epilogue. Judy and Don are married. They've got a kid. The robot gets a name. It's all there on the set. Links to all that goodness waiting for you there in the show notes at my website. It is one-stop shopping for all your Lost in Space needs. Huge thanks to Marta for stopping by the lair to chat today. Truly appreciate her celebrating the show with us. Again, if you're listening to this episode the day that it airs, Saturday, the 29th, if you're in New Jersey, I hope you get a chance to meet her and her Lost in Space family. That would be so cool. I wish I could be there, hopefully at a future convention. In fact, if you attended the East Coast Comic Con, if you met the cast, if you sat in on the Q&A, I want to hear all about your experience. Drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can click the Signal Me tab on the website, or better yet, record a voicemail at the website. If you can get those to me by Thursday, April 27th, I can include all those on Kevin Burns' episode. I can put them there. If not, if you get them to me later, I'll include them on a later episode. But if you get them in now, that'd be cool. Get them in on Kevin Burns' episode. So looking forward to hearing your adventure, folks. Speaking of emails, my mailman, Virtual Willie Lumpkin, he delivered some here to the lair. First up, I heard from Scott Doran, who writes, "Hey Joe, I enjoyed the interview with Bill Mumy. It's nice to hear fellow comic book geeks on your show. Not only Mumy, but Mark Hamill as well. I've never seen Lost in Space, the series. Shame on me, but I have heard of it. As for the Lost in Space Innovation comic book series, I'm sure that people can find that on eBay. Love the show. Talk to you soon." Hey, thanks, Scott. So glad you enjoyed hearing from Bill and from Mark Hamill. Yeah, those were great episodes. Wait till you hear from Kevin Burns next week. I'm telling you, another card-carrying member of Nerd Nation. Always fun to talk to those folks. And look, no apologies, no shame at all in not seeing the series. It's been off for quite a while. You know, it's an old series. Blu-rays were only released a couple of years ago. In fact, I was just talking with somebody the other day. They said that they'd never heard of the series. They never heard of the robot. I was trying to explain it to them. You know, it's the thing is, it's not like Star Trek. I mean, Star Trek has a ton of movies. It's got a ton of episodes. It's got a ton of everything. But Lost in Space, it is a very cool series. And like I said a few episodes back, if you can't swing the bread right now to lay out for the Blu-ray set and the books and all those cool things, all that merchandise, check your local library. They might have something there. Mine here in Columbus has the DVD set that came out a few years before the Blu-ray. So it's there. You can get all the episodes. Also, I believe Hulu is airing the shows. MeTV, I think that they're airing them as well. So there's a few economical ways you can check out, you know, all the freaky swinging 60 space age goodness that is Lost in Space. You mentioned the comic books from Innovation. You can definitely find them online pretty cheap. I know mycomicshop.com has got a bunch of them. Again, you want to keep in mind, though, Bill's epic run called Voyage to the Bottom of the Soul, it's cut short about halfway through that run, though, because Innovation went bust, you know, like 6 issues into his run. So it was printed as a complete adventure years later, but that's now out of print. It's really pricey to get. I talked about that in that episode with Bill Mumy. Stay tuned next week. I do chat a little bit about that with Kevin Burns. You'll find some interesting thing there as well. Next up, I heard from Paul Gleave. Paul wrote in and said, "Hi, Joe. Just a short note to let you know how much this dyed-in-the-wool Lost in Space fan enjoyed your interview with Bill Mumy. Seeing the first episode of Lost in Space back in 1966 made me a lifelong science fiction fanatic. I still remember it was late on a Saturday afternoon. We still lived in Manchester, England. This was 2 years before we emigrated to Australia. I was in the kitchen with my mother and younger brother. Dad walked in and said, 'There's a new space show starting on the telly.' I shot into the lounge room, sat perched on the edge of the couch closest to the TV, and had my 5-year-old brain forever changed, scrambled, by the pilot episode of that wonderful show. Spaceships, laser guns, jetpacks, robots, aliens, monsters, alien planets, and vistas, all backed up by great special effects, sets, props, costumes, sound effects, and incredible music. What more could a 5-year-old boy want in a single television show? And there it was, made just for me, every week on my TV. Irwin Allen had looked directly into my heart and mind and made real all my TV wishes. And he didn't stop there. He also gave me Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, Time Tunnel, and Land of the Giants. Thank you, Irwin. And my best friend of over 44 years now, Peter Hurd, he's also a huge Lost in Space fan. Just last weekend, I visited with him, and we watched together the second season episode, The Green Man, and we were 5 years old again. Oh, thanks for sharing your Lost in Space experience, Paul. That was fun to relive that with you. Paul also sent in some pics of his Lost in Space figures. I'll try to get those posted on social media this week. Yeah, you're right. The show did have everything. That's exactly what I remembered from when I was a kid. All the monsters, the gadgets, all the cool stuff, action, adventure. Yeah, music by John Williams, my goodness. I mean, we didn't know at the time, but looking back, how awesome was that? And like I've said, what others have echoed as well, we like to pretend that we were the characters. We lived out those episodes, just like we were playing Batman or Superman or Spider-Man. I was playing Will Robinson. I was trying to be Will Robinson. And the show had everything for boys and girls. Will and Penny, they were both always having crazy adventures, and that appealed to everyone across the board. And of course, what can you say about Dr. Smith's alliterative put-downs of the robot? Come on, that's comedy gold right there, right? All good stuff. Hey, I also heard from artist Lynn Workman. Lynn is nice enough to tell me that he often has Comic Book Central on in the background while he's drawing classic comic book characters. Lynn wrote in and he said, "I was drawing in the Batcave tonight and listening to episode 167, the Michael Uslan episode. I loved the Swamp Thing movie and loved many of the pulp hero movies you mentioned, especially The Phantom. Really enjoy period pieces like It, The Rocketeer, and even The Shadow. Was so saddened to hear Bernie Wrightson's passing. I just received his new Cycle of the Werewolf Kickstarter calendar. I first met him at Wonderfest many years ago. I was waiting outside the show for it to open, having some breakfast with a couple of friends, just standing there with my model kits. Bernie walked over after finishing a cigarette to see what I had in the box. He could see some bat ears sticking out. We talked for a few minutes until some staff came out to usher him to his table. Watched him draw a Swamp Thing sketch for their charity auction. Got to run into him and Liz at San Diego and Little Rock a few more times over the years. Have gotten to be friends with Len Wein. Lucked out meeting Dick Durock when he and Len were promoting Swamp Thing at San Diego Comic Con. They were giving away free Swamp Thing masks, and I was able to get them and Bernie to all sign it. That was the same year I got to meet Dave Stevens before he passed away, too. He was an awesome guy in person as well, and we both geeked out a bit about our love of GBs. I've got Michael Uslan's The Boy Who Loved Batman book in my collection. I really need to find the time to sit down and read it along with a few others. I believe I ordered it because of hearing about it in your first interview with him. I have Psychology of Batman, I need to crack that open, and a few other Batman history books I've picked up at shows. I've been reading A Psychology of the Watchmen, and I really need to finish it up, about halfway through it now. Speaking of Watchmen, have you ever interviewed Jackie Earle Haley? He's been on the new Tick Pilot and Preacher series too. I recently did a Rorschach cosplay. Yay, a superhero I'm the right height for. Well, got to get back to drawing and checking out more Comic Book Central episodes. Type it to you later. Hey, thanks as always for listening, Lynn. Glad I can provide you some company while you're working there. Always appreciate that. By the way, folks, stay tuned as always to Comic Book Central. Might have something very cool coming up regarding Lynn in the not-too-distant future. Just saying. You mentioned, okay, in your email, GB's. Look, the GB's I know is a department store in Pennsylvania. I know you're a Memphis guy, so I'm not sure that that's what you meant. If it is, that's really cool that you know about it. I love GB's department store. Great chipped ham sandwiches that they had there. Just made me hungry for a GB special chipped ham sandwich. If it's the Bee Gees you're referring to, well, I love them as well, too. Nothing like eating a GB special sandwich while listening to the Bee Gees. Hey, that's a weekend for me right there. I'm telling you. I think that might be my weekend. Okay, Jackie Earle Haley. Great idea. Would love to have him on the show. I invited him to be on the show. He has not been on the show. So, look, you longtime listeners know I keep trying. Persistence and patience, that is the key to what makes Comic Book Central so special, right? Hopefully one day he'll drop by the lair. Great suggestion. Keep him coming. I always want to hear guest ideas, so keep him coming. All right, kids, that's it for today. Time to close up shop. Fly on out of here. But just like those Lost in Space cliffhangers, this one's going to be continued because next week on Comic Book Central, I'm bringing this celebration of Lost in Space to a close with none other than the ultimate Lost in Space fanboy. His first gig in Hollywood, he rediscovered the robot and brought him back to life. Yes, he did. He kept the spirit of Irwin Allen alive and well through numerous documentaries and TV specials. He is the Emmy-winning producer of A&E's Biography. He directed the definitive Star Wars documentary, Empire of Dreams, and he does the best Jonathan Harris impression you will ever hear. Yes, he does. Never fear, Burns will be here. Kevin Burns, next week, talking classic Lost in Space. And wait till you hear what he's got to say about the new Lost in Space. Yeah, Kevin is not a no-comment kind of guy. He's going to be doing some talking. No holds barred, deep dive into Lost in Space with Kevin Burns. You do not want to miss this one. Until then, remember, never fall asleep in giant soul-sucking plans. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 Imported License. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Hands up! Oh, come now. You wouldn't shoot a girl, would you?
Sure I would. Watch!
How's that?
Mmm. More?
Mmm. That's why you outlaws are so mean. You're always hungry. Never saw an outlaw shoot anybody on a full stomach. Now, you tell your mommy we have 6 different kinds of jiffy snacks. All she has to do is open a can, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What's your name?
Jackie.
Hi, Jackie.
Bye.